and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have the latest on health and healing, including what happens when you start having those sugary beverages or foods to your brain. You'll get the latest on that. Also, how to have healthier brains with higher omega-3s. Also, how women can help increase their likelihood of not getting breast cancer with a special nutrient. And delaying aging by good habits means a better quality of life for years to come. Also, increasing brain acidity can reduce anxiety, and increasing melatonin can influence the risk of developing prostate cancer. So we have a lot to share, including on saffron. Rarely do people use saffron. It's very expensive. It's the most expensive herb there is. But it does something really good. My guest in the second part of our program is a board-certified cardiologist who's going to look at ways that we can reimagine the role of our heart and vascular system in our lives to sustain cardiovascular health. Dr. Cynthia Take from Burbank, California. Also today, I'll be addressing the concerns of a listener that I just saw 5 minutes ago on the street who asked a basic question. The person says, I work in one of those firms on Wall Street that you don't like because you believe that it's all based upon greed. I've been there 10 years. It is based upon greed. That doesn't mean that we're all immoral or we're all greedy because we work there, because not everyone does. End up in some greed pit. But I don't listen to the health and nutrition segment of your program. I like the social commentaries. I especially like your insights because you've been right on every one of these. Which way do you think the economy is going to go and why? Not our economy, but the world economy. All right, I'll give you my ideas on a trifecta for disaster that is ensuing now and why it's likely then to impact the United States. Also, what is standing in the way of America becoming a more balanced society, more equitable society? Michael Payne from Op-Ed News on how we can do that. Also, Henry Giroux has a brief commentary that shows why we are a fascistic state. And since I'm doing a whole series on this, that'll align with that. In our public health segment, how drug companies are killing our kids for profit, by Dr. Stuart Bramhall. And studies prove without a doubt that unvaccinated children are far healthier than their vaccinated peers, from VacTruth. And to John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador in Bush administration, and all the others, on Fox, you give us reasons why we should always be at war, why we should be bankrupting America to keep the military-industrial complex and your friends in the military-industrial private corporation complex rich and going forward, you and Dick Cheney. I'm going to give you 6 reasons to stop fighting wars by David Swanson. Let's begin. First and foremost, most people never assume that when they're eating or drinking something that there could be a damaging effect that could be sustainable on your brain. But glucose is really a problem. It can trigger all forms of inflammation in the brain, which can lead to brain problems if you do it more than once. Well, we do it every day. We do it multiple times a day. When you have sugar in your coffee, you're doing it. When you have a soft drink, you're doing it. When you have a bagel, you're doing it. Because something is common and we consider it normal doesn't mean that it's right. This is from the New England Journal of Medicine. They examined over 2,000 individuals in this study. And published in the journal, they said, quote, elevated glucose, that's your sugar, levels risk factor for dementia. And here they talked about how when you're taking anything that's got sugar, and they followed these people for almost 7 years, that they were far more likely to develop dementia. All right, but before you get to dementia, you get to memory loss, short-term memory loss. And that is one of the problems. You don't remember what you have forgotten. So as a result, you can end up with the conversation that I just had. I'm sitting here in my New York office, and a person comes in and says, Gary, I'm here to talk about my protocol for my brain. Okay. Do you know anything that could help me? Because I'm starting to forget things. Yes. So we sit and we chat. And when the person leaves, they say, oh, I'm really grateful for this. And then they get down the steps and they come back up and say, what am I supposed to take? I say, it's in your hand. Oh, okay. And then about 5 minutes later, just before I'm entering the studio, the person's standing right outside the studio and say, Gary, I know I came up here for something. I said, yes. What I didn't tell the person was that since I've returned to New York the last 3 days, they've shown up every day in my office asking the same questions, asking for help. I give it to them, and they forgot they were here the day before. That is the beginning of dementia. But that happened after short-term memory loss. You have no idea what it's like until you've been around someone who can't remember a conversation just had, will have the same conversation 10 times in one day with you. And they're not faking it. This is the damage. Now, this person loved sodas. And they didn't drink alcohol, but boy, they drank a lot of sodas. Same impact upon the brain when it comes to causing inflammation and cytokine activity. So just remember, we have an epidemic of brain dysfunction in America today, and it's going to get worse. I predict that within the next 5 years, we will have $1 trillion a year costing us on our aging population. And a lot of that's going to be people who will be losing their memories. So get off the sugars in any form. Now, here's what you should have that can help the brain. Here's the good news. The Journal of the American Medical Association, or the Journal of the American Heart Association, followed up on some very important studies done at the University of East Finland that showed that almost 4,000 people participated in this study for an 8-year period, and they found that, quote, healthy brains with higher levels of the omega-3 fatty acids. Quote, among older adults, higher phospholipid long-chain omega-3 fatty acids content was associated with lower prevalence of subclinical infarcts, those are strokes, and better white matter grade on MRI. Our results support beneficial effects of fish consumption, the major source of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids on brain health in later life, end quote. That's good. And also vitamin D, this is the latest from the peer-reviewed journal Nephrology, the British medical publication, saying that when they looked at almost 500,000 patients with end-stage renal, which is your kidney disease, those that had the highest intake of vitamin D were better off than those that didn't. There was a 39% lower risk of dying of all causes if you had your vitamin D. So get your vitamin D every day. Brain plaques, that's the amyloid plaque that builds up in the brain that is really devastating. And you see that in dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. This is associated with hardened arteries. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, from the American Academy of Neurology, and it showed that patients who had hardened arteries, what we call arterial sclerosis or atherosclerosis, are far more likely to end up with plaque in the brain. Now, let's go back to something I said about 7 years ago. I did a whole hour on what happens when you're taking in junk food, pizzas, hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, pretzels, the things Americans love, salty and crunchy and sweet and soft. And I said that your blood carries everything, toxins, inflammatory agents, nutrients, oxygen, through your body constantly. It never stops. It doesn't take long to reach almost every cell in your body. And then on the way back, it goes through the kidneys, the liver, takes out the toxins, then they're taken out of the body. And then every time you inhale, you take in new oxygen. Every time you drink or eat, you bring in more nutrients. And the key is to bring in nutrients in the most easily digestible form, which means there's a better level of assimilation, absorption, and utilization. Now, of course, the highest level of nutrients getting into your body is when you juice, because there's no digestion required. And when you make a smoothie in the morning, and a smoothie, putting in, let's say, a handful of walnuts, teaspoon of coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and put in your berries, your protein, rice, whatever, split pea, soy, whatever kind of protein, organic sourced, and your beverage, and whatever combination you want, you're getting fiber, essential fatty acids, amino acids, but it's all blended and therefore minimum digestion in and out of your stomach, probably in half hour to an hour. That means your body's benefiting from it. Your blood sugar is stabilizing, rising and stabilizing. Therefore, you have energy for about 4 to 5 hours. This is all good versus eating toast. Well, that's going to take over an hour to get out of your stomach, probably two, because the body has a hard time breaking down, hydrolyzing into a liquid form, something that has been charcoaled, overcooked. It would be no different if it were meat. And it's really bad when you have any kind of fat. Well, most people put butter on their toast. That's a bad thing. Most people have some kind of fat for breakfast. Now, depending upon what kind of fat you have, if you're having what a lot of people are having now, getting their fast food breakfast where they've got bacon and eggs and hamburger and cheese, it's just loaded with grams of fat. When you take in fat, it's like asking a 60-mile-an-hour group of cars to go 5 miles an hour. Everything slows down in that intestine. That causes constipation. That causes dehydration. That causes toxins in the food you've eaten to come in contact longer with the sensitive mucosal membrane of the intestine, hence increasing your risk of diverticulitis, spastic colon, colitis, polyps, precancerous or cancerous conditions in the intestine. It also means that fewer nutrients will actually be absorbed. So liquefy as much as possible. Have little meals throughout the day, and you'll be feeding your brain and your body. But also, if you take in those berries, your berries will help break down plaque on the walls. The polyphenols are great for that. Vitamin C is great for that. Coenzyme Q10, vitamin E. So this way, you don't have the plaque building up in the arteries, and hence you don't have the plaque building up in the brain. I have never seen someone who had hardening of the arteries who didn't also have hardening of the brain. The limitation in our existing medical model is that somehow the same laws of chemistry and physics that pertain to everything else in the body are not pertaining to the brain. They do. So healthier arteries, healthy diet. Healthier brain, healthy diet. also a higher magnesium rate, let's say 800 milligrams a day, is associated with a reduced risk of metabolic impairment. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care. So by 18 to 37%, when you start taking 37% likelihood of developing diabetes by one nutrient, that's a big deal. This is part of the Framingham Heart Study cohort. They measured people for 7 years, and that's what they found. Also, folic acid, and always try to get the methylated folate, will lower heart disease risk in kidney disease patients. And we have a lot of kidney disease problems, mainly because of our diet and alcohol. But according to the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Nutrition, when you take in folic acid, and this is based upon 9 separate randomized trials, over 8,000 people, you can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease in those patients by just taking one single nutrient, folic acid, about 800 micrograms. Also, we found another study that showed that women, this was in breast cancer research and treatment, that in 5,600 women diagnosed with breast cancer, if you took in vitamin D, you were 36.8% less likely to develop breast cancer. So, and you were 76% less likely to die if you had higher levels of vitamin D. Now, we're not talking about a full-spectrum holistic protocol. I'm only talking about one nutrient. That's easy to do. So for all the women in this audience, please start taking 3,000 to 5,000 units a day, every day, of vitamin D3. And finally, a good study from the Journal of Health Affairs from the University of Southern California and Harvard University, they found that, quote, if we can age more slowly, we can delay the onset and progression of many disabling diseases simultaneously. They are right, but we've been saying that for a long time. And that's because we know that when you make a choice, you're actually making two choices with every single choice that you make. And as just imagine this. Imagine that every single thing you say in private, at a dinner table, to your partner at night when you're in bed together, to a friend when you're joking, that there were thousands of people, I gave you this example yesterday, watching you, and you could see them. They were 5 feet away, and they're judging you. And some of them will say, well, we can use this to blackmail you. And others will say, we're going to get every single piece of data in the world on you. And no matter where you go, we'll know where you're at. We'll know who you're with. We know what you've done. Any communication, we're going to find out. And even if we can't hear what you're doing, we'll see what you're doing. Would you change anything in your communication or what you're doing? Would you be concerned? Would you feel offended? Would you feel somehow that, why are you there? Now, a lot of Americans could care less. If you put a camera in the average American's toilet bowl, I don't think that'd matter. They'd probably put it up on some reality show. That's how warped and perverse we become. That's how dumbed down we become. And we all know that. This audience knows that in particular because you're grossly offended by what you see in the mainstream media, not just in the, you know, the stupid television shows and the moronic radio shows and the bias in the media and the pretending to be objective when they're not, but just the idea that someone assumes they have a right to this. Who gave you that right? Where did this right come from? And why aren't people protesting? Well, there are people protesting. The trouble is the people who are protesting are not the people who are in positions of policy making or opinion leading. It's those who are not, who are protesting, and they are all the time. You don't know about what they're saying because people are not listening to the radio stations that do have people who champion our freedoms and our Bill of Rights. Now, what would be different in the choices you made if for every choice you made in life, you immediately had a chance to see two outcomes? You're about to say something. Two outcomes. One is positive, one is negative. What would you do? If you could see that one drink at that party was going to kill 4 million cells in your body, brain, kidney, liver, and heart, and you actually saw it, you saw the cells, and the cells looked at you, and the cells are unique, and we never think about this. You have about 100 trillion cells, and the cell will do everything in its capacity, all 100 trillion of them, your entire life. All that you have to do is acknowledge that they're there on your behalf. They have the consciousness that becomes the sum total of your existence. So, what would happen if you had to have an arbitrator? And the arbitrator says, if you do A, you're going to kill 4 million of your own cells. How smart is that? And you say, but I can do anything I want. It's my body. How dare you assume that, you know, anything like conscious ethics, morality, common sense, reason has to play any role. I am an ideologue. I only believe in ideology. I am ramrod rigid. I cannot be flexible. I cannot compromise. I cannot listen to any other argument. So if I want to have this beer or this bottle of whiskey, if I want to take this product, that's my business. Absolutely right. You are right. But what if you didn't do it and you did something that was actually healthy? You'd also be right. Here's the irony of life. You're going to be right in everything you do. Everything you do, you're right in. You just won't like what you're going to get with most of the choices you make. So that's how it works. So this just an idea to impart in our minds. Why don't we stop long enough and contemplate for just a moment, what is the likely outcome of the choice that I'm going to make? And then see if that will help you change the choice. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about how we make our choices, what some of those choices will be if we make a healthier choice. I have a lot to share with you today before we get to our guests. I'm sure that you all have seen the ads at some point on television for products involving children. With rare exception, they're all unhealthy. And yet, think of all the people who have to be aware that they're unhealthy and say nothing. Think of the doctors and the nurses, the dietitians, the public health officials, the executives for television companies, the stockholders in television companies. Think of the lawyers. Well, let's not think of them. We know what kind of scum they are. But think of all the other people, politicians. Let's not think about them. We know what kind of really low-life, degenerate, human, pathological scum they are. So let's think about people who are actually human beings and not psychopaths, sociopaths, or moral degenerates. Let's think about what it means when you have an entire nation that calls itself responsible and ethical and moral. Boy, do they wrap themselves around that. And yet, when do they stand up against the abuse of our children? We now have epidemics in heart disease and heart attacks, in cancers, and in brain imbalancing conditions in our children. That's a non-controversial fact. All the science supports that. But we have no counterbalancing effect to stop it or reverse it. The pediatricians are unquestioning zombies that will do anything. Their Bible, which is this comic book called The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry number 5, says an abnormal brain chemical imbalance. They won't say, where's the science? There is no science here. It was just based upon opinion of a group of people frequently associated with the pharmaceutical companies. They won't question that. So they'll give another shot or another pill or another diagnosis. Unfortunately, our children are held captive at every level by people who either are indifferent or ignorant, choose to be ignorant, but don't want to confront the problem. Well, there's one person that stood up on behalf of the children, Dr. Stuart Bramhall. He has written a simple essay here. I'm going to share it with you. And it's called Drug Companies Killing Kids for Profits. I'll post this on our website, as we do all of our articles. And by the way, on my next program, I am going to have, I was going to do it today, but our largest audience of the week is on Monday. So I'll do it on Monday, because I want a lot of people to hear this. It's an in-depth essay, fully documented, on the psychopaths who control our entire financial and political establishment. I think you'll find it of interest. I'm trying to write one original in-depth piece per week. So, this is the newest one. The myth of childhood bipolar disorder. I'm quoting now. Practicing psychiatry for 8.5 years has given me a unique perspective on childhood bipolar disorder. In my view, the most dangerous, quote, made in America condition. This, too, is a condition virtually unknown outside of the United States. My membership in the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists has led to an acquaintance with Melbourne psychiatrist Dr. Peter Perry and his work exposing a conspiracy by Eli Lilly and other American drug companies to pressure psychiatrists, pediatricians, and primary care physicians to prescribe dangerous antipsychotic drugs off-label to American children. Drug companies are deliberately breaking the law. Prescribing off-label refers to using medication for an indication that has not been approved by the FDA. As yet, no antipsychotics have been approved for use in children. Drugs must meet extremely high safety standards for the FDA to allow their use in children. Moreover, it's illegal for drug companies to market medications to doctors or the public for off-label uses. However, the fines they pay are so minuscule compared to the massive potential profits that it's considered good business practice to pay the fine and keep on doing it anyway. As well as publishing numerous studies on the controversy over childhood or pediatric bipolar disorder, Dr. Perry has put together a PowerPoint presentation that he gives at grand rounds and conferences around the world. In addition to summarizing all the academic research on both sides of the issue, Dr. Perry has also gained access to internal Lilly and Janssen pharmaceutical memos about their innovative campaign to, quote, medicalize children's behavior problems by promoting the concept of pediatric bipolar disorder to American doctors and parents. Perry's sideshow starts with studies comparing U.S. attitudes about pediatric bipolar disorder to those in the United Kingdom, Germany, New Zealand, and Australia. For the most part, foreign psychiatrists either don't recognize pediatric bipolar disorder as a diagnosis or regard it as extremely rare. According to Dr. Perry, the discrepancy revolves mainly around an insistence that both children and adults manifest symptoms of true mania to be diagnosed bipolar. By definition, this requires 1 week or more of continuous euphoria or anger mood, accompanied by rapid thoughts and speech and extreme agitation. Over the past 15 years, an increasing number of industry-funded psychiatric research have been claiming that extreme temper outbursts, rages, and rapidly changing moods are a manic equivalent in children. They also claim children with extreme mood swings will go on to develop true bipolar illness in adulthood and that early treatment will minimize the severity. Increasingly, this is proven it's a lie. It's not true, as only a small percentage of children diagnosed with pediatric bipolar and started on antipsychotics ever experience genuine manic episodes. Fortunately, an increasing number of American child psychiatrists are also challenging the alarming trend of starting children as young as 2 on antipsychotics for severe anger and behavioral problems. They are also increasingly concerned that psychiatrists and pediatricians are making the diagnosis of childhood bipolar disorder without obtaining full developmental histories, including screening for trauma and attachment difficulties, and the most common cause of extreme mood swings, or classroom behavior information from teachers. the antipsychotics and anticonvulsants used to treat pediatric bipolar can have quite dangerous side effects. There are scores of deaths associated with their use in children, in addition to serious long-term medical complications. Understanding why foreign psychiatrists are so scandalized by their American colleagues' cavalier attitude towards pediatric bipolar disorder by prescribing dangerous antipsychotic drugs to young children requires an elementary understanding of the research-validated model of child personality development traditionally used by child psychiatrists and psychologists in assessing emotional behavior problems. This approach is based on the premise that accurate assessment of any child's difficulties must always assume that they are a product of their environment. If children with extreme rages and temper outbursts come from a chaotic home where parents are constantly yelling and screaming, these problems must be recognized as a developmental problem rather than a mental illness. In other words, a negative family environment has caused some aspects of the child's emotional development to be delayed. Diagnosing a child with mental illness, such as bipolar, when the real problem lies with the parents, does both the child and the family a great disservice. This developmental approach theorizes that all babies are born without the ability to regulate anger and other extreme emotions. In infancy and early childhood, parents help children regulate their emotions through soothing and calm limit setting. Via the constant repetition of this process, children eventually learn to regulate extreme emotions on their own. Where a problem commonly develops is when parents themselves have never learned emotional regulation and respond to children's anger and distress by losing their temper. At the same time, delays in the ability to regulate extreme emotion can occur for reasons other than inconsistent parenting. The two most common are trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, sexual abuse, and attachment difficulties. The child fails to bond appropriately with the primary caregiver. And physical and emotional abuse may stem from school bullying or an abusive sibling and have nothing in the world to do with poor parenting. And then it goes on to talk about how all over the world, from the South Pacific and Europe, child psychiatrists are arguing that it's not a mental illness, doesn't need drugs, just needs to talk with the people and understand what's going on in that child's life. I would fully agree with that. And I'll give you just one example of a couple that I came in because they had a child that was having all kinds of problems, and everybody had determined the child had both bipolar problems and ADHD problems. I talked with the child, and I asked, could I talk with the child alone? Yeah. And so I just asked, are there teachers you like? Yeah. Teachers you don't like? Yep. Things that excite you? Yep. Things that bore you? Yeah. What are the most boring things? And so I just took note. What are the most exciting things? Took note. And at home, how's everything at home? You got a brother. What kind of relationship you have with your brother? Good, bad? Told me. And then I invited the parents back in, and I asked them, which class does your son like best? They didn't know. Which class does your son not like? They'd never ask. Does one of you ever yell a lot? Yeah. And do you imagine that a young kid, if you're yelling at him, is going to impact him? Well, I thought he'd get over it. No. No, you're the only people that child can depend upon. So once they understood that the child was not bipolar, was not ADHD, because the child wasn't consistently in one place. Because it'd be like you saying, this is how stupid medicine is today and teaching has become when a teacher decides they're a doctor and diagnoses a kid, little Jimmy, who's not paying attention as having ADHD. Imagine that you go to a family outing. Someone says, how you doing? Doing great. Love this day. Having a good time. Anything wrong? Everything's perfect. Then the next day, you visit the same person. How's it going? I got terminal cancer. Terminal? Yeah, terminal. Today, I'm just not feeling good. So today, I've got terminal cancer. The next day, how you doing? I'm feeling great. Anything wrong? Nothing's wrong. Well, how can you have terminal cancer and not have terminal cancer? Cancer's not terminal one day and gone the next, and not there one day and terminal the next. It doesn't work. You either don't have terminal cancer or you do have terminal cancer. Which is it? This is the game they play with this myth, total fraud of brain chemical imbalance. And they've gotten away with it because the courage of the psychiatrists, with the exception of Peter Bregan and others, Thomas Sawes, to stand up and challenge them and say, okay, you say schizophrenia is due to a brain chemical imbalance? Show me the science. Show me the independent science, not based upon a drug company that's trying to sell like a drug. They can't. In my new film, you will see this. And when you watch this, your jaw's going to drop. You'll see a completely normal person going in for a diagnosis with a whole group of board-certified psychiatrists, all teaching psychiatrists, who within 7 minutes, as early as 2.5 minutes to as long as 7 minutes, diagnose with a mental condition and give them a prescription. Then we show you that same psychiatrist filmed out on the street with the person saying, this person's totally normal. Well, it's subjective. Well, hold on. You didn't say it was subjective. You gave him a diagnosis. Is there no can you show me any evidence of brain chemical imbalance and leading to this condition? No, it doesn't exist. So in other words, it's just your interpretation. Do you realize the side effects of the medication? You could put this person, including suicide, anesthesia. That is the field of mental health as we see it today. So good for these people for standing up. Of course, the American psychiatrists are not standing up. And we have a whole nation that's not standing up to say, why are we feeding our kids to death? Why are we creating adult diabetes at an epidemic level in our children? Why are children dying of heart attacks and strokes? Why do our children have arthritis by the age of 10? We don't have the courage yet to face those truths. Because if we did, we'd have to be looking in the mirror and saying, how did that happen? Well, it happened because you allowed it. It's your kid. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? I'm Gary Nall. Our guest in just a moment, but to address a question that a person asked me today, I believe that we have a worldwide economic collapse that will dwarf what we saw in 2007 through today. It's not speculation. It's just looking at the facts. First, you look at the facts. China's economy is slowing. Now, there's actually three economies in China. There's the real economy, but only about 25 to 30% of that is based upon manufacturing. There is the financial economy, where much of it is financed by the government. 40% of their gross domestic product of about, it's around $12 trillion there, $13 trillion is financed, no, $10 trillion is financed. Their gross domestic product is financed by the government. But also you have the hidden economy, and it's massive, and it's purely speculative. And it's all slowing. But also you're seeing the devaluation of different currencies, from the rupee, for example, in India, but the economy is slowing in each of the countries, Brazil, India, Turkey, South Africa, Indonesia. And also that is causing problems in the Eurozone. You're also seeing inflation in the Eurozone. And in the Eurozone, your biggest problem right now is Italy. It's one of the largest economies of the European Union, and France. And France is the second largest economy in the Eurozone behind Germany. And when these second and third largest economies start to falter, you've got serious problems. There have been probably close to $30-plus trillion, that's $1 trillion, injected into the different economies of the world by U.S. central banks, European central banks, even the Japanese now are doing the same thing. They are flooding with massive liquidity into the economies. But if we did it correctly, we would have supported homeowners. We would have insisted to the banks that you must bring the value of the mortgage down to the value of the property. That would have saved probably 90% of homeowners. We would have forgiven all interest above 2% on all loans, including student loans, and that would have saved people from bankruptcies. But instead, we did just the opposite. And this was not a mistake. This was intentional. Virtually all the liquidity went into the speculative markets. Stocks, bonds, derivatives, futures, options, foreign exchange funds. These are the things where corporations can secretly keep massive amounts of money and or hide them in offshore accounts. And this is what we're seeing. Now, right now, the wealthiest individuals have doubled their wealth in the last year. It's up now to $4 trillion. That's correct. $4 trillion a year is how much they're going to make every decade. So one small group of people are making massive amounts of money because they're in speculation. These are called shadow banks. The shadow banking system is utterly and completely corrupt. It's immoral. It should not exist. It should be completely taken out of business. These are the ultimate vultures. These are not nice people, because nice people don't destroy people's lives. These people go out of their way to destroy people's lives because they want every nickel on the table. Hedge funds, private equity, asset management companies. These are unregulated, and they've doubled their assets to $71 trillion. That's how much they control, $71 trillion. That's enormous globally. And these are not people building factories, creating jobs, building infrastructure. These people are making money off money. Whether it's the euro, the yen, the yuan, the dollar, it's all based upon their control of the financial system. But they are the ones who are all well-connected. They're the ones who roll out the big paycheck or the big money to the politicians. And then also, this has caused everything else to increase in price. So then when the European Union doesn't have new labor, and a lot of countries like America doesn't have new labor, so you don't have people who are gainfully employed with a good paycheck to buy stuff, they stop buying as much. That means the cost of producing in China goes up. The salaries go up. So now guess what? China is no longer the favored nation to go to. No. You're going to see people going to Vietnam and Thailand. That will be the new China, because you can get even cheaper made stuff there. So China is just its local government, so $5 trillion, about the same amount as all of our states in the United States at the state level. With massive speculation, you've had 20% increase in property values. So everyone's in a bubble. China's in a bubble. The European Union's in a bubble. America's in a bubble, a commercial real estate bubble, a hedge fund bubble, a credit card bubble, a student loan bubble. We're in all these massive, and most importantly, Wall Street. Wall Street cannot continue. It's all a bubble. How did we get there? By massive funds borrowed at nothing from the Fed, dumped into major corporations, including financial stocks, to get the bubble up. They'll take their money out before the crash comes. They'll even make money on the way up, and they'll make money on the way down. That's why I see smart people get out of debt, don't buy anything, get out of dollars, get into gold and silver. That's my suggestion. Let's go to my guest standing by now. She is in Burbank, California. She is Dr. Cynthia Take. I gave you her background earlier. She is a clinical wellness director in Burbank and Valencia in Southern California. And she's developed a national foundation that educates people and physicians on the prevention and treatment of cardiovascular disorders. And she is also an author. She graduated the University of Chicago School of Medicine and continued to Harvard's Medical School. And her book is Your Vibrant Heart Restoring Health, Strength, and Spirit from the Body, and her website is drcynthia.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Nice to be here.
Let's take a look at the big problems that we're facing. Heart disease and stroke, diabetes and obesity, these are all interconnected. And because you've received an excellent education at some of America's top respected medical schools and have practiced conventional allopathic medical approaches for dealing with cardiovascular disorders and illnesses for many years before embracing a more integrative and holistic approach towards heart health, I'd like to begin with a different approach. What, in your estimation, does conventional pharmaceutical and surgical-based medical models for heart and vascular health get wrong and why, get right and why, and then what is our most critical and essential issues that conventional cardiovascular medicine is missing and needs to wake up to?
Yeah, I mean, I love the discussion that you were having earlier about mental disorders as well. I think we are so quick to, diagnose diseases and so quick to use the quick fix in terms of pharmaceutical. Obviously, dollars are needed, research is needed, and so that's what pharmaceuticals fund. And so for me, in terms of what allopathic medicine has gotten right, I think that heart disease is the leading killer among men and women. We definitely need the research that has driven, and the dollars that have driven that. But I always tell my patients, whether we use pharmaceuticals to lower your blood pressure, your cholesterol, or diabetes, those lower the numbers. They don't change anything regarding the metabolism, regarding the inflammation, regarding the actual derangements that are occurring within your bodies. And so in terms of where homeopathic and lifestyle changes offer that conventional medicine doesn't, is that it allows the person to get back to this natural state in terms of really healing the metabolic derangements within the body, lowering your inflammation, the cholesterol level in a natural way. And so, we spend billions and billions of dollars, as you were referring to earlier, with procedures and hospitalizations for cardiovascular disease, and we know for a fact that that does not change morbidity or mortality. And we spend so little on the educational piece and on the prevention piece of really understanding what underlies heart disease. And a big factor in that to be is, really looking at the stress level in people, looking at how they conduct their lives, the various behavioral changes that we need to be making with respect to their processed food, and how that all affects within, our cells in terms of our cellular levels.
Explain that a little more detail, please, because historically, we only think of the heart in the West as a mechanical muscle that functions either in maximal health or less so. And yet throughout the world, the heart is seen as having a greater meaning, such as love, affection, devotion, compassion, and kindness. The heart implies our emotional state of either feeling joyful and elated or broken and sad. So take us on that journey, please.
That's right. I think that so much of physical heart health has to take a whole life approach to health, that you really need to look at all facets of the heart, not just the physical. And it's really the emotional and what I consider the mental and spiritual heart that really are the key to total health and well-being. When I mentioned earlier about stress impacting so much of heart disease, I tend to tell people that every thought, every emotion leads to instantaneous cascades of, hundreds and thousands of neurotransmitters, inflammatory markers, cytokines that we haven't even began to touch the surface of, the things such as cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine. Those are the obvious. But those hormones then turn around and have actual effect within the bodies in terms of affecting our blood sugar, affecting our blood pressure, our heart rate. And so for me, it's really about getting back to really learning how to handle the stresses in your life, leaning towards the positive vibration and vibrational energy, as you mentioned about having love and gratitude, and looking also at the things in our life that brings us, joy and happiness, be it laughter, dancing, music. I mean, those activities that we rarely think about when we're talking just about, health or heart health, actually I think have as much, if not more, benefit, certainly we know, than the drugs and the pharmaceutical, in terms of really changing our being. Heart Math is doing a lot of work looking at the heart as being sort of the having more neural connectivity, that the emotions that we resonate with in our heart then turns around and has impact on our brain biochemistry. It has effect within our GI tract and our immune system in terms of allowing us to protect ourselves, having the sort of the fortitude and the resilience that comes from people who sail through life just really not having worries or concerns, and that always impacts then on their physical health or well-being.
Since your whole the majority of your work is understanding the holistic approach to the vibration of our energy's impact, the energy communication, and the hormones and on the heart, you've witnessed as a lot of emotional patterns to cardiovascular health. How do you see a person embracing some kind of spiritual outlook on themselves and others and the world around them as something essential for their cardiovascular and overall well-being?
To me, as you mentioned, I've been, practicing allopathic medicine for close to 20 years. And it wasn't until I myself got, connected to my spirituality and realizing that, life comes with a divine purpose, that everything for me shifted. And so I feel that having that a spiritual connectivity, realizing that we are all sort of co-creators of life, that there are vibrational energies that when you allow yourself to get into that still quiet space that you can, connect with Source, and that there's this inner guide that really allows us to have a deep knowing in terms of the things that we can and cannot be doing with respect to our heart health and just our general well-being is so important. To me, I think that so many of us are sleepwalking through life. We're surviving in a survival mode rather than in a thriving mode. And to me, when you allow yourself to get back to, a lot of what the Buddhists talk about being mindful, being present in the moment, really connecting to that inner guide within us through Source and Spirit, that all the downloads come, that really will allow you to get all the answers that you need with respect to your health.
I sure do agree with that. You've done a good job with your vibrant heart. The book, the website is drcynthia.com. Last name is pronounced Take, but it's T-H-A-I-K. Thank you very much for being on and giving us this motivation.
Great. Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time, and I want to thank you for joining us.
Try to do that. Luck fella's got to hold.